Hey guys, and welcome back to episode 14 of Underrated, a podcast where we look at films we believe are underrated, generally disliked, or simply forgotten. I'm your host, Gabriel Green, an honest, hardworking peasant. And with me is my co-host, James Hamrick, the selfish, spoiled, all-powerful emperor of some unspecified land somewhere in South America. And now he's a llama. What's up?
Oh, nothing much. It's pretty much par for the course.
Cool. All right. And I know we said last week that we'd be reviewing A Knight's Tale, but we lied, so get over it. Instead, to celebrate the release of Disney's upcoming animated feature, Moana, we decided to go back in their filmography and review the old cult classic, The Emperor's New Groove. But we will be back next week with our review of Knight's Tale. So before we get into the main topic, have you seen any cool movies lately this week?
Yeah, so I am a big fan of Guillermo del Toro. And my brother and I hadn't seen Crimson Peak yet. And so we decided, you know, it's about time we watched that. So we rented it and watched it, and I was not a fan at all. I thought that the cast was fantastic. Everybody was perfect in their roles. As great of an actress as she is, I did feel like sometimes Jessica Chastain's British accent felt weird, but maybe that's just me. I thought the production design was amazing, like the art direction.
I forget. Was she American? Or was she the English one?
She was the English one.
Okay. Yeah, because Maya Wasikowska is American, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, and I thought I was going to hate this CGI, because I mean, to do CGI ghosts whenever Guillermo del Toro is so known for practical effects, I thought would be stupid, but they were such, like, interesting and unique-looking kind of ghosts, and it was really creepy. And then the plot... It's just so bad to me. There's so many different subplots. So much of what happens in this movie doesn't even really need to happen. And honestly, there's no real reason this needs to be a ghost story. The ghosts add nothing significant to the plot of this film.
They make a mean trailer, though.
They make an incredible trailer. And they make an incredible opening scene that's very deceptive, because it makes you think that, wow... Like, I'm in for an incredible movie because it's just so well done. But then at the end of the day, you could literally take out what ghosts are in the movie, and the plot stays the same. There's no reason for the ghost to exist in it.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Del Toro fanboy. I like some of his work, don't care for some other ones. But I was kind of disappointed by what we got in the final film. I agree that the story just wasn't there. Although the style and cinematography is gorgeous, and I enjoy the last act, but it's kind of boring up till then for me.
Yeah, so overall, I was pretty disappointed. And then I saw a movie that we both very much disagree on. We both went out and saw Arrival, and I absolutely loved Arrival.
Yes.
I'm glad that I think it's as good as everybody was saying.
Yes, I also saw Arrival. I was fairly bored for most of the film, and when I wasn't bored, I was mad. For me, I have no problem with dumb sci-fi. I love dumb sci-fi. But I don't like when dumb sci-fi thinks it's really, really, really smart and then tries to beat you over the head with how deeply profound it is. And... for me, when this film finally came around to telling you what it was about, I felt it was like almost embarrassing to be watching it. I don't want to spoil it, because everybody else in the world seems to be enjoying it, so I don't want to spoil it for anyone. I just found the core plot and themes to be incredibly stupid and cliche, and then there's this kind of what I felt was a very tacked on dramatic arc that's thrown in the last 5 minutes that, first of all, was not earned at all, and then secondly, really does something I don't like to one of my favorite characters in the film. So it's just a bunch of problems laid on top of each other. And then I didn't like the cinematography at all. I thought it was very dark, very difficult to see, kind of ugly, this really drab blue-gray color over everything. I didn't it was a fairly unpleasant just viewing experience because it was difficult to see. It was constantly straining because it was so dark. And then the story I didn't care for. And I didn't care for anything.
I actually liked the cinematography a lot. I love the shot. It's one of my favorite shots like in a sci-fi movie now. It's whenever the helicopters first approach it. And you just hear this like really foreboding score as it's kind of doing a 360 view. And then I know the arc you're talking about at the last 5 minutes. And it's actually something it's a sad yet kind of bittersweet arc, and it's actually one of the things I love about the movie. But
yeah, I do love that shot too. I think the composition in general is pretty good. I just wish they turned on some lights, basically.
I can see that.
And the score is kind of a Sicario rehash, just so you know.
I don't know. I thought Sicario didn't use as much vocals, I thought. Or maybe I'm...
The really discordant sound they would make kind of at random throughout, that was like directly from Sicario.
I need to watch Sicario again, which isn't a bad thing. I love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not that I don't like Denis Villeneuve. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. I love Sicario and I really enjoyed Prisoners. It's just I don't like when this director tries to go cerebral. I think he should stick to trying to portray kind of a level of he's just trying to portray reality. I think he's incredible, but then I don't like when he tries to go cerebral. I think he just ends up really annoying and irritating. Oh well, I know I'm in the minority on that one, but I stand by it. And I also went and saw Hacksaw Ridge, Mel Gibson's latest directorial feature, and it was fantastic. It's definitely going to be on my top 10 this year. It's the story of a Desmond Doss, a conscientious objector who became a medic during World War II on the Battle of Okinawa. And I only saw it last night, so I'm still kind of processing it. But it starts off really well. It kind of tells his story and has one of the most adorable love stories I've ever seen on film in the beginning. And then it moves to kind of boot camp, and you see him stuck in this really awkward situation of being a conscientious objector in the military. And then once it moves into battle, it gets insane. I think I've heard a lot of critics criticize it, saying it glorifies violence while supposedly being pacifistic. And I really don't think that's fair. I think it's only after we see how truly horrible this war is, how just terrifying it is. Because this film doesn't portray war as fun in any way. And, I mean, it's almost like a horror film. Just you are on the edge of your seat, and you just, because you have no idea what's going to happen throughout the battles. They're insanely good. And so I don't think we could truly appreciate how brave this guy is to run into that without a gun, unless we actually know how terrible war really is. And from what I've read of World War II, it seems fairly realistic how this film portrays it. So I really disagree with that criticism. I love the acting. Andrew Garfield, I think he gives the best performance I've seen from him. I loved him as Spider-Man, but he's fantastic here. I thought the accent would be kind of hokey from the trailer, but it works. Hugo Weaving is also amazing. He plays his father, and he gives one of the best performances I've seen from him. And even guys like Sam Worthington give great performances. I'm not like a Sam Worthington hater, but I never found him terribly interesting, but he's also great here. And I think it's one of the best war films I've ever seen. So definitely, if you have not seen it, go check it out.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it, and I'm really wanting to see it. I was hoping I'd be able to see it this past weekend, but other things came up, so I was not able to. But it's definitely like at the top of my list of things to see. And then just about the portrayal of war, I remember reading a review where this guy said he went and saw it with his dad, who was a war vet, and he saw it, and his dad, he's like, my dad said that it was very realistic, but I can't help but feel Mel Gibson went over the top. And I'm thinking, your dad knows what it looks like, and he says it looks right. And then you're saying it's too much, and you have no experience with that. I don't know. That criticism just seems kind of ridiculous and silly.
I've read quite a few books on World War II, and it feels like what the books described and just how horrific it was, especially when fighting the Japanese. And I think the film does a good job not trying to completely demonize the Japanese. I mean, it's true to reality and some of the horrible things they did, but it's not like as in, not kind of like it doesn't like completely demonize them. I thought that was good. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I think I'm ready to get into our main review.
All right, let's move into our main review of The Emperor's New Groove. This film was released in 2000. It was directed by Mark Dindo on a budget of $100 million. More on that later. This is an interesting history to this film. It features the voices of David Spade, John Goodman, Eartha Kitt, Patrick Warburton, Wendy Malick, and the score is by John Debney. And you want to read the synopsis, James?
Yeah, so this movie is about Emperor Kuzco, who is turned into a llama by his ex-administrator Yzma, and must now regain his throne with the help of Pacha, the gentle llama herder.
Uh-huh, and if that synopsis didn't turn you off right then, which it did for me for basically up until last night. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is my first time seeing it. It was just watching the trailers, it looked so, so stupid. So I avoided it up until now. And I did see this, I watched this film, then went directly out and saw Hacksaw Ridge. And so I think that might have overshadowed this one a bit, so I'm not sure I have a lot to say, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things about this movie, and really kind of what makes the movie work, is just the cast. Everybody plays their roles so well. Nobody feels like they're just reading their lines. Everybody feels like they are this character. And so the first cast member I want to talk about is Eartha Kitt. I think she is so funny in this movie. She has, like, really, really good delivery. And, like I said, she acts the part. She doesn't just read what's on the script and then call it a day. She like, emphasizes what needs to be emphasized. She's just got really great comedic timing and really, really great back and forth with the character of Kronk. And so I just found her lines, like, honestly, after I'm done like talking about the cast and some specific scenes, I feel like most of the pros I have about this movie are just lines that I found hilarious.
Yeah, I definitely agree on Eartha Kitt. It was just her chemistry and back and forth with Patrick Warburton as Kronk was hysterical. Like there was a couple lines had me like I had to pause the movie because I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, and then just on. On Patrick Warburton, I feel like he's probably everybody's favorite character's Kronk. He has some of the best lines of the movie, and his voice is just perfect. And so he's a perfect actor for animated films. There's just something about it. He has really great comedic timing. His delivery, like Eartha Kitt's, is just spot on for every single line. I feel like in almost every single scene he's in, there's some line that he has that's just perfect and hilarious. And then David Spade and John Goodman have really good chemistry together, I think. David Spade has like the perfect voice for his role as well. Like that's one thing that I kind of noticed about this is everybody's voice, like they got actors who have very distinct voices. Like they speak and you instantly recognize who they are. And so I think that just having the main cast be all of these people whose voices are so recognizable and who can like be so animated with their voices was really good. And so David Spade as just the very arrogant and egotistical but funny kind of South American ruler was really good. And then I feel like impossible to not like John Goodman unless he's playing the crazy person like in 10 Cloverfield Lane. But
and then you still like him then.
Yeah, even then he still has really likable moments. So he's just a really like there's something about his voice as well. It just makes him a very likable character. And I find Pacha a really fun protagonist to follow. So overall, just this cast was really, really good.
Yeah, I actually didn't even know John Goodman was in this film until I heard him speak, and I was like, awesome! Yeah, interesting. Did you notice the voice of Piglet from Winnie the Pooh?
I did not.
You know, the old man that throws off his groove?
Oh, that's it. Castle? That makes sense now.
Yeah, I was like, is that guy, is it the Winnie the Pooh or Piglet? So I really quick looked it up and it was him. Yeah, John Goodman is, he's such a fantastic actor. He can play creepy and dangerous, but also he can be the most lovable person, as he's proven with roles like this or Sully. He's always going to be Sully to me for the rest of my life. No matter what I see him in, he's going to be Sully. There's some interesting things I wanted to talk about the film's production. Are you aware of kind of the issues with this film?
This is one that I saw years ago, and it was kind of before I was, into, movies and looking up kind of the production of it. So I'm actually not sure what the story was on this.
Yeah, because like the budget is $100 million, but if you look at the film, there's only like four actors, and the animation is fairly simple. It's effective, but so it does. It looks like maybe like a $20 million or $40 million film. So I'm guessing most of the budget went in. To the preview, it was first going to be a film called Empire of the Sun, and it was, from what I could tell, going to be more of an epic along the lines of like Pocahontas or Mulan. But Disney kind of got cold feet halfway through production and essentially hired new directors and took it and turned it from this kind of more serious epic animated film into the buddy road trip comedy kind of thing we have now. And it's interesting because it was like it originally intended to be a musical, and so it was like completely changed over from the ground up. And there's this documentary that was created for it that was commissioned by Disney during production, but then once everything went haywire, they basically buried it. And so it's only available here and there. I tried to look it up so I could watch it, but I couldn't find it. And like every now and then become available online, but there's this documentary called The Sweatbox that kind of details all the production issues that had that Disney then buried after the film was released. It's a really interesting production history.
That is interesting. Like it's weird. Something that I've noticed, went to Disneyland and Disney World, and I feel like this is like the one animated movie that you will never see anything like at Disney over any characters. There's nobody dressed up. They don't sell like Emperor's New Groove stuff there. It's really weird. It's unfortunate because I love this movie, but I wonder if that has something to do with just the problems that they had in making it.
Yeah, and I think also it doesn't really fit with their brand. Looking at it, I would never, like, if I watched this film, I would never guess Disney made it. I think it was made in the early 2000s, late 90s, where I think their studios were kind of beginning to falter. It was right before Bob Iger came on and all that. So the troubled production really makes sense, but it feels like it would be a DreamWorks film in just tone and style. I think Disney really, they don't do a lot to promote it, but it does have a very vibrant cult following. Even though I never saw it, I was always aware of a bunch of people who like would always be quoting and said it was like the best film ever. So it does definitely have a very vibrant following.
Yeah, I remember whenever it was actually, I wasn't able to see it in the theater because I was very young when this came out. I was 5, I think. But I remember when it came out to buy, my older sister bought it for me, and I watched it, and I would just, it was on a VHS tape, and I would just hit rewind as soon as it ended and watch it again. And so I knew, watching it again, because it was on Netflix, and so I watched it, and I found myself quoting along with the movie, even though I hadn't seen it in years, just because it's like so ingrained in my mind. But I mean, I do agree with what you said. It feels very different from a lot of Disney films. I think a lot of the humor is just kind of different from the way that they would normally make their jokes. One thing that I thought was really funny, the style of humor that they did, was I loved all the fourth wall breaking in it. Like, whenever whenever they pause and he's like, just to remind you, this is not about Pacha. This is about me in the bag. And then he's circling everything and he goes back. And then whenever he starts arguing with himself, we get caught back up with where he was at the beginning, where he's like, this is me as a llama. Let me tell you how I got here. And then we get to that part and he's like, hey, shut up. They saw the movie, okay? You can give it a rest. It's just a lot of like really funny ways that they're breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, interesting thing about that, the flash forward beginning where they show the kind of protagonist in his misery, is a similar thing they did with Iron Man, where they open up with him being in this really horrible circumstance, and then they bring you back to where he's a horrible jerk. So it's kind of a trick that they use to make you care about the character, where otherwise if you're only introduced to them as a complete jerk without seeing their downfall, you wouldn't care about them. It was rather interesting because I was just listening to like a podcast on Iron Man where they specifically mentioned that. So it was kind of on my mind when I saw that.
Huh, that's funny. I wouldn't have made that connection, but yeah, he is such a jerk whenever we do see him at the beginning. But
yeah,
I think David Spade really is able to play like this jerk that you're still entertained by, very much in the same way that Robert Downey Jr. was.
Yeah. About Pacha, it wasn't a huge portion of the film, but I really enjoyed his family life, and his wife was a great character. She's only in like two scenes, but she was a really fun character, and I liked how she handled Yzma when she came around.
Oh, I love one of my favorite scenes is whenever they have him locked in the door, and she's like, "Are you sure the doorknob's not there?" And so we cut in there, and only their eyes are lit up because they're in the dark room. And Yzma says, "Break the door down." Krug's like, "Break it down? Are you kidding me? This is hand carved mahogany." Like, that scene is one of my favorite scenes in the movie because every cut to the like to a different thing that's going on, there's always something funny happening, and usually it's Krunk saying a funny line, or like you said, Wendy Malick, she's barely in the movie, but she does what the rest of the cast does, which is she's not just in the studio reading her lines, she's kind of becoming that character, and she's actually giving a performance, because a lot of the times, I don't know, I feel like side characters who aren't in it much in animated films, just they're kind of there, but she was really good.
Either that or they steal the whole film. It's kind of a either or. Yeah, no. Tell me where he is, and we'll burn your house down.
I think you mean or. Oh, tell me where he is, or I'll break the house down.
And I really enjoyed how this film has absolutely no sense of logic or physics or anything to it, and they even call it out. It was like, how did we get here? I don't know. By all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
And then
all right.
They just instantly go back to the scene. I love that chase scene. When they look down and they see that there's the markers, like they're leaving markers behind, they just kind of shrug, like, I don't know. The chart that he pulls down, he just like reaches off screen and pulls this random chart down that's not connected to anything. So that scene was really funny.
The sense of timing and cartoon physics is pretty hilarious throughout.
I think one of my favorite moments with Yzma, probably the line I end up quoting the most, is her original plan to kill Kuzco, and she's like, I'll turn him into a flea, and I'll put that flea in a box, I'll put that box in another box, I'll mail that box myself, and then I'll smash it with a hammer. And she's just so enthralled with this plan, and then she accidentally knocks it down. She's like, oh, or I could just do this.
Yes, or to save on postage, I'll just kill him. Yeah, she's such a great villain.
Scary beyond all reason.
Yeah, how would you describe her? I don't know. Maybe scary with beyond all reason.
That's her.
Yeah, though, I'm surprised she survived.
Yeah,
you think they would kind of take care of her because she was fairly evil as a cat, still as well. So,
but Cat Yzma, I find hilarious and yet adorable, and I'm glad they kept her around because that last scene with her as the squirrel Boy Scout or whatever they are with the acorn is a great ending.
Yeah. Although it is kind of uncomfortable how they treat the character of Kronk. He's supposed to be this lovable guy, but he is willing to randomly murder whatever he's told to.
No, he grew a conscience.
Oh, only after she insulted his Spanish puffs.
Oh, that's true. The scene in which he first, when he's told to kill Kuzco, and he brings him out there. I think that maybe not. I go back and forth with that in a couple others. It's my favorite scene, but whenever we first are introduced to his shoulder angels, and because he voices both of the angels as well, whenever the first one or the devil shoulder or the, I guess the demon angel or whatever it is. He's saying, I've got three reasons why you should follow me. And the first one is just, he's insulting the shoulder angel. And then, he's like, reason number two, look what I could do. And the Kronk is just, I don't understand why this isn't a shoulder angel. No. This guy's got a point.
No, vengeance comes from above. That'll do. I think this review is just going to be us quoting the film, because, as I said, I don't have a lot to say, but I only just saw it. I'm still kind of processing it, but I definitely enjoyed it. Do you have anything else you want to mention?
Other things that I liked, other than, like you said, just a bunch of quotes. That's almost what my entire, I didn't have anything listed under the cons. Like, I wanted to try to be balanced, but, I mean, it's not a perfect movie, but watching it, there was nothing that I was like, this is worth mentioning under a, like, as a negative. I just enjoy the movie. One last thing that's not just a quote is, even though it's kind of subtle and it's not in it throughout, I like the music. It definitely doesn't stand, like, with the upper tier of, like, the Disney classics, because most of the classics have just phenomenal music that we'd all recognize. But it's nice music. It feels more than just filler, which is what it could have been.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, they have the song in the beginning, and then there's no more music after, or like a musical song in the beginning. There's no more singing after that. And I read that that was actually the only song they kept over from the original musical version, was that one intro song, and they kind of cut the rest.
Yeah, it's weird knowing that. Because I didn't know that before, knowing that it was originally going to be a musical. I guess the reason they kept that one is because it does a really good job of introducing you to who Kuzco is at this point in time.
I was just looking at the stats. I guess another reason you don't hear about much is it only made $169 on a $100 million budget.
Yeah, I do wish that it... Well, what is weird, though, is that it did end up getting a sequel. Kronk's New Groove was made, as well as a show on the Disney Channel. There was like The Emperor's New School about Kuzco having to go back to college or something. So it was weird that it got a sequel, both as an animated film sequel and a television sequel. But I guess all in all, it's not considered, with all of that together, even to be really a financial success. So Disney doesn't talk about it a whole lot anymore.
Yeah, I doubt they put much money into the straight to DVD releases. Usually those are basically like made for almost nothing and then released to kind of pad the pockets in between feature films.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, Kronk's New Groove, of the spin-off straight to DVD Disney films, it's one of the better ones.
Oh, really?
But, yeah. You can still definitely tell it's a straight to DVD movie, but at least had some redeemable qualities, whereas most of their straight-to-DVD movies are just almost unwatchably bad, I think.
Yeah, I've only seen the Bambi one. That one wasn't awful, but I generally try to avoid them just knowing their reputation.
Yeah, I feel like if they're not confident enough to release it in the theater, it's most likely not going to be that great.
Mm-hmm. Though from what I hear, that actually kind of saved the studio in their darker times. Actually saved their animation studio. I think if I had a dislike, it would be the character of Kuzco. I think he betrays Pacha maybe one too many times for me to actually buy his redemption in the end. I can understand if he did it maybe once or twice, but it seems like it just keeps happening, where he acts like he's nice and he's still a jerk. And yeah, it's funny, but it does make it difficult to in any way care about his character when he's such a jerk.
Yeah. I kind of, for the first time since it's been such a long time since I've seen it, kind of realized that. Because, like, oh, yeah, this is the part where he betrays him. And that happens again. I was like, oh, that's right. He does it more than once. I forgot about that. So, yeah, I kind of, whenever Pacha is sitting with the llamas, like, he's waiting for him to return, I'm like, you're a better man than I, because I'd be back home at this point. I wouldn't have been waiting for him to realize that they are trying to get him.
Yeah, I probably would have let him wander off into the jungle.
But, like I said, maybe it's just because I grew up with this movie, but, like, I have pretty much nothing negative to say about it. And I could just probably sit down and quote this movie from beginning to end just while we're here.
Yeah, the style of the film kind of doesn't even allow you to have negatives, because anything, any stupid plot hole, if it is there, they just call it out and ignore it.
Yeah, they're like, yep, this happened. It's the way we're doing it. Let's move on.
Yeah, and I bet they were, like, in the writer's room trying to figure out, how do we get this person from point A to point B? I'll just have them reference it, and then it'll be fine.
Like, the very end, whenever Yzma has it, and Krunk opens the door, and he just says, what are the odds that trip door would lead me out here? And then it just moves on. Just the funniest kind of deus ex machina is imaginable.
Yeah. And the sequence where he is changing into all the creatures and... And then all the guards are turned into animals, and they're like, the first guy's like, can I be excused? I believe I've been turned into a cow. He's like, what about the rest of you? Oh no, we're good.
Yeah, we're fine.
We only live once.
And they all just fall out instantly. I feel like maybe it was the changing, like the Disney kind of losing confidence in it. And it almost feeling like, yeah, this isn't going to be what we originally thought it was going to be. Maybe made them feel like they had more license to just throw anything they wanted at the wall and see what stuck. Like,
yeah, which is kind of what they did for basically in between, like, late 90s till, like, when did, I'm trying to think, did Tangled or Princess and the Frog come out first?
I don't remember.
I think, like, Bolt and Meet the Robinsons is where they finally started to find their footing again. But in between there, there's a lot of not-so-good films. They kind of tried to switch to CGI in their first one. Chicken Little's kind of awful, which is by the same director, actually.
I cannot believe you just insulted Chicken... Oh, Chicken Little. Sorry, I got that confused with another movie. I thought you said... For whatever reason, my mind told me you said Chicken Run.
Oh, Chicken Run's fantastic.
I was about to say.
Yeah, I have nothing to say against Aardman. Have you seen Chicken Little?
Yes, I did see Chicken Little, and I don't hate it. It's entertaining for what it is, but it's not, like, it's certainly not upper tier Disney.
All right, do you have anything else you want to mention about this movie? I'm kind of out of things to say.
Yeah, I guess that's what happens when it's a movie barely over an hour that's essentially a series of nothing but really funny quotes. There's only so many quotes you can say.
Yeah. When it kind of proudly has zero substance.
Yeah. It wears that on its sleeve with pride. I just say that if you haven't seen this movie, I think it's hilarious. And it's not one of the huge Disney animated movies that everybody knows and loves. It's, you know, it's kind of like Gabriel said, it has a cult following. But I think it's deservedly so. For me, it's in terms of just humor, it's my favorite of the Disney animated films. I do find it to be the funniest of their animated movies. So if you're wanting just a really funny movie to watch, one that you can put on with your kid, not have to worry about it, I would recommend this movie because, like I said, I just find this movie to be hilarious.
I'm glad I got a chance to see it, and I'll probably see it again in the future. But I think... probably Megamind is still my go-to funny animated film.
I love them both, but I don't know. I think I think the character of Kronk and Yzma, their duo, just... This is the movie. I was so happy when this was put on Netflix. Because it's just such an easy movie to, since it's only an hour, to just throw on. And
yeah, if nothing else, those two characters make it worth viewing completely. Yeah, this, like as I said, there's not a lot of substance. There's the kind of sort of cliched story of the jerk who becomes nice in the end, and that's done well enough. The actors play it off fairly fine, and so I really have no complaints about it. It's just there's not a lot of substance, and while I enjoy the viewing, it's not the kind of one I want to immediately go back to and experience again.
Yeah, it's the story of the jerk becoming a good guy, but have we ever seen it done where he's a llama trying to become a human again?
I don't think we've seen that.
Yeah. It's thoroughly original.
Yeah, exactly. All right, yeah, so if you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's very funny. It's worth seeing. Yeah, so this is definitely one of our shorter reviews. There's not a lot of like negative criticisms to deal with or anything. I think it's pretty well liked by everybody who's seen it. So yeah, next week we will be back on schedule with A Knight's Tale, and that one I definitely look forward to. I have a lot to say about that one. I really like it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen A Knight's Tale. I like it, but I do remember having certain issues with it. But I do look forward to seeing it again, because maybe seeing it with new eyes will make me like it even more.
And if you enjoy this podcast, I'd like to ask you to please go to iTunes and subscribe and rate and review us. That'll really help us. And if you want to follow us, you can like us on Facebook. That's where we do most of our interaction. We're on Facebook as Underrated Podcast. We also have a website, underratedpodcast.com.
And then we also have an email account. If you want to email us at theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com, send us any emails for really whatever you want to say, comments, criticism, suggestions, whatever. And then we're also on Twitter, so you can follow us on Twitter at underrated_pod. So we look forward to any sort of interaction with people, and we like to, you know, we've actually maybe added a couple of suggestions that have been on our Facebook page, so we definitely look at that.
Yeah, and we love interacting with you on Facebook, and if you have any suggestions of films you think are that you wish had more love, definitely shout them out to us. We might put them on sometime.
So, next week, really, A Knight's Tale this time, I promise. So we will see you with A Knight's Tale a week from now.
See ya. He was born and raised to rule. No one has ever been this cool in 1,000 years of aristocracy. An enigma and a mystery in Mesoamerican history. The quintessence of perfection, that is he. He's the sovereign lord of the nation. He's the hippest dude in creation. He's a hat cat in the emperor's new clothes. He's of such selected breeding. Generations have been leading to this miracle of life that we all know. What's his name? Cusco. That's his name. He's the king of the
And you gentlemen are?
Well, I am Sir Ulrich von Lichtenstein from Gelderland. And these here are my faithful squires. Delves of Dodgington and Foulhurst of Crewe.
I'm Richard the Lionheart, pleased to meet you. No, wait a minute, I'm Charlemagne. No, I'm St. John the Baptist.
All right. Hold your tongue, sir, or lose it.
Now you see that, I do believe. Sir Ulrich.
Thank you. Jeff.
Have you any more to say, Master Newt, or having failed your test, may we be on our way?
Well, you're off to the tournament, are you?
This is the road to ruin, isn't it?
Well, you know, that really remains to be seen. See, they're limiting the field at Ron. Noble birth must be established for 4 generations on either side of the family. Patents of nobility must be provided. Listen, clothe me, shoe me, for God's sake, feed me. Let me ride that horse a bit and you'll have your patents.